This is BBC.
BBC Radio.
Six Music. This afternoon from 4. Hey! Amy LeMay. Yeah. At 2, Guy Garvey's finest hour.
Six Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Chuck D.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Everett, and welcome to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first records and moments that made them who they are today.
Come on!
This week, we have one of the founder members of America's most consistently groundbreaking and innovative hip-hop band. In fact, one of the most important American bands ever. They burst onto the scene in the mid-80s with their incendiary brand of politically charged and socially conscious hip-hop, and they changed music forever. After hearing the demo track, Public Enemy Number 1, a fledgling producer by the name of Rick Rubin insisted on signing my guest and his musical partner Flavor Flav to his Def Jam label. This led to the release of mind-blowingly great albums such as Yo, Bum Rush the Show, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, and Fear of a Black Planet. He's an activist, author, publisher, lecturer, producer, radio presenter, and one of the best-known voices around. I'm very pleased to say that my guest on The First Time this week is Chuck D. In this interview, Chuck talks about the music that surrounded him growing up in New York in the 60s and 70s, his first impressions of meeting his bandmate, Flavor Flav, the huge impact that Run DMC had on him, and Public Enemy's battle with the mainstream. And obviously, he discusses the state of America right now. But I started by asking him, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time he was aware of music as a child?
I was born in 1960 from New York. Mother, Motown, Stax, Atlantic. Father, Columbia Jazz Club, although he didn't listen too much to the records. Throw some James Brown in there, throw all the music of the 60s, and I'm aware of music going all the way back to rhythm and blues. Ray Charles played in my household. I was scared of him and Stevie Wonder because they were both blind, and I couldn't understand how two blind guys could sound so good and deliver music.
See the girl with the red dress on, she can do the bird line.
So was music like kind of a special thing in the household? Was it like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to put something on now? Or was it just around like an atmosphere?
Music was around like an atmosphere. I come from two black parents from Harlem, and music of voices in the household was like aunts and uncles speaking in the household as well. It was accepted. So out of that, it was always a part of life.
Yeah. Because like sports was your thing before music, is that right?
I wanted to be a sportscaster, but music was always there. And sports was always there too, but music was always heard. Sports, you had to engage yourself in front of a radio or television, but music was just on because it was on radio or it was being played on the record player.
Who did you want to be when you were a kid? Which musician did you kind of dream about being like, that's the person I want to be?
I didn't want to be any musician when I was a kid. I wanted to be a right fielder for the Mets or a second baseman.
Give them a yell, give them a hand, and let them know you're rooting in the stand. Come on and meet the Mets, meet the Mets.
And then as an adult, I guess we were always fascinated by James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
James Brown was the first musician I knew that made us go from Negro to colored to black. And one swoop would say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud.
Put your bad self, say it loud.
I'm black and I'm proud.
Say it loud.
I'm black and I'm proud.
Some people say we got a lot of malice, some say it's a lot of nerve. But I say we won't quit moving until we get what we deserve.
Doesn't
Motown to me is in my blood so deep. I mean, before you could have an iPod or streaming music on your phone or whatever, these records already lived inside my head and already was riding on my imagination. You know, songs like, you know, Undisputed Truth, Smiling Faces Sometimes, you know, it's just in there. Stevie Wonder, Fingertips, hearing it since I was 3 years old. Yeah, it's embedded. I mean, I grew up in New York, so music, you know, pop radio meant everything. So we would hear, you know, Gladys Knight and the Pips next to a Steely Dan record. And then when you find out who was from New York and you start hearing songs from the Brooklyn Bridge and you're hearing throwback songs like, you know, Frankie Lyman still up in the mix of pop radio, you really got a sense of what the music was and was about. I mean, you could smell the food on Under the Boardwalk by the Drifters.
Under the Boardwalk.
He was thinking Coney Island and Nathan's Hot Dogs. So, you know, I mean, you can't beat that. And then they would give you a visual picture because you listen with your imagination.
From the park, hear the happy sounds of a carousel. Can almost taste the hot dogs and french fries they sell.
When was the first time you actually kind of went to a concert, went to a gig, saw some music live? Because that's always a really big thing. When you see it, like, when it's in front of you, you hear it in the same room. Can you remember that?
Well, I know that in Roosevelt High School, the bands that came were music teachers that would bring their bands in and play covers of things like Jungle Boogie by Kool and the Gang. My first concert that I paid and spent my money at, it was Madison Square Garden, 1978. The Commodores, the OJs, and Heatwave.
That's a good gig. What do you remember from that?
Remember that the crowd was fanatic.
When you went to that show, did you find yourself kind of drawn to, like, wow, these performers, they've got everyone just in the palm of their hand? Did you feel like that? Did you want to do that?
Yeah, and I sat in the nosebleed seats. I was way, way back, but I took this girl from my college and we had a great time.
Sly and the Family Stone, this is an artist that you've talked about, that you've name-checked before. And, like, even today, I don't think Sly gets... I mean, he's respected, but I don't think he gets the props that really he deserves. What is it about him that you fell in love with?
Sly Stone is a walking beat. He's a walking music beat and message. And I think when you get older and you hear the message of simplicity on top of the music, of complexity, which is simplicity, and the message is complexity. He does a dance with both worlds. I mean, George Clinton told me best. He said, man, if you could just walk behind Sly with a tape recorder, you'd find so much to go on.
Hey, then! I do high speeds to expect to get a fair shake, but they won't let you forget that you're the underdog and you got to be twice as good. Yeah, yeah! Even if you're never right, they get up tight. Moving up too fast.
Charles Funk and Soul Show.
All right. Oh, yeah. Recreating with Bunting, Fairy and Disco Lights.
Love is love
with you. Mix up funk, soul, disco, touch of old school rap. Go on, turn it up, I dare ya. Put your dancing shoes on. Banging tunes. Your Saturdays have been restored. Boom. Oh, yes.
It's a great Charles Funk and Soul Show.
Saturday night from 6.
BBC Radio 6.
Plus, listen to past shows on BBC Sounds.
When did you first realise that your voice could deliver, that your voice was this kind of instrument, that you had that kind of power? Because it's rare, that ability to communicate like that. When did you first think, okay, this is something I can do?
I count my blessings because it's rare to have a voice that lasts this long, so strong.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from my dad, DNA, God, taking care of myself, but I'm only a chip off the old block because my dad could yell across a mountain. So I wanted to be a sportscaster with my voice, and then the hip-hop bug came out in the 70s, and I could make a bad mic sound good. That was my goal.
That's a nice way of putting it. Can you remember, like, was there a record you'd kind of sit at home holding that sleeve, like poring over the pictures, like getting absorbed in that work? What was it? Was there like a teenage record that you couldn't be separated from?
I think a teenage record that is Funkadelicky by Parliament. I first heard the record and I hated it because I couldn't understand it. And within a month and a half, I end up loving it and can't get it out of my system.
Yeah.
It's what dragged me into the Parliament Funkadelic system. I mean, George Clinton, who also appeared on our latest album.
Yeah.
And led our latest album, What You Gonna Do When the Grid Goes Down. That's where I asked Uncle George to just be him, and we really thank him so much for that blessing. A lot of people go to George Clinton for his funk, and that's the no-brainer. But we went to George Clinton for his visionary and his futurist ideas. And Uncle George is... It's his funkosophy is what we wanted it to go forward with.
Where do you get your funk from?
Funkism.
Trade your funk spell relief for this.
You deserve
you
a
like
break
that?
Today. Have it too.
Longer they keep a nose away. Ain't it cute? I ain't gonna hold the lettuce, the pickle, or the mustard.
First single I bought with my money was a record named Master Booty by Fat Back Man. It was like kind of like in the middle of disco funk and was a record that we were able to dance to because you didn't have to do the hustle. And it opened up the floor, which already was open because of the freak.
What was the first release that you ever did? Was it Spectrum City? Was it Check Out the Radio? Was that the first?
Check Out the Radio and Lies on Vanguard.
What can you remember about recording that?
Well, we wanted to hurry up and get rid of recording Lies and wanted to get to the B-side, which was Check Out the Radio.
Mm.
But I felt like it was a job recording Lies. I wrote it. I wanted to make a record that had a message in it. Myself and Butch Cassidy and Spectrum City actually made the record to actually promote our radio shows.
Yeah.
We didn't want to become recording artists. And so I recorded Lies under the producers at the particular time. And so myself, Hank Shockley, Eric Sadler, Keith Shockley had, I think we had like 5 hours left of studio time. And I think John Bradley was the engineer. And we went in and recorded what we wanted to record. It represented what we felt in the streets. And that was Check Out the Radio, which once again brought it full circle of what we wanted to talk about in the first place. We wanted to promote the radio show, or we wanted to promote our presence on radio. And so Check Out the Radio happened to be a song that even the Run-DMC, Rush Productions, Future, Def Jam record label thought was an interesting component to segue into their growing existence and foundations as what was later on to be like the black print of hip-hop record label.
Spectrum City on your fresh M dial. On the Spectrum City roll call, we got President Hank Shockley, voice of Chucky D.
I'll load the beatbox with Cassidy, baby.
And on turntable number one,
and turntable number two,
is the music of the W.I.C.
A.R.D.
Wizard K.
K-double E.
On the wheels of steel, y'all. Come on, check it out.
You mentioned Run DMC there and Raising Hell especially. These were really, for you, these were really important records.
The most important record to me.
Yeah.
Raising Hell by Run DMC showed me that rap artists could go head to head with rock artists in the same arenas with the same fanaticism and enthusiasm and crazy, frenetic, fanatic response. And also complete an album format that's diverse, just like a rock group, and be able to perform it really well and do videos at that particular time that was just as competitive. And it was the greatest album, still is the greatest album of all time. It showed me that rap and rock were head to head. And a lot of naysayers would say, well, rap is not rock and roll. And I shut them up real quick by saying, well, fool, rap is might not be the rock to you, but it's the roll.
First time with Public Enemy's Chuck D, and we'll have more from my conversation with Chuck coming up after the Six Music News.
Six Music.
This is BBC Radio.
Six Music.
BBC News at 1:30. I'm Erica Fisher. Boris Johnson has warned of a tough winter and bumpy months ahead in the battle against coronavirus, but said he hoped things would be radically different by spring. He said people should behave fearlessly but with common sense, and urged those in local lockdown areas to be patient and keep following the rules. But the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, speaking on Sky News, said people living under additional restrictions were getting fed up. up.
I've certainly felt this week that we've reached a bit of a tipping point with all of this. The government are really in danger of losing the public in the north of England. And actually, if they carry on imposing restrictions on the north without proper support for the businesses and the employees affected in the north, we will see a winter of levelling down and the north-south divide getting bigger.
The Prime Minister also said he was sure President Trump would recover from the coronavirus as long as he followed his doctor's advice. In a video on social media, Mr. Trump said the next few days would be the real test as he continues his treatment. It's understood the global cinema chain Cineworld is to close its sites in the US and the UK indefinitely, putting more than 5,000 jobs at risk here. The firm has said it's been hit by delays in the release of big-budget films. Phil Clapp from the UK Cinema Association says last week's decision to postpone the release of the new James Bond film until next year won't have helped.
The movement of No Time to Die is one of just a series of changes in the film slate. And although cinemas opened in July and have been able to deliver a safe and enjoyable experience without major new titles, then we understand we aren't able to get as many people out of the home as we'd like.
And Ethiopia's Shura Kitata has won the men's race in the London Marathon in a thrilling sprint finish. Bridget Koskei from Kenya retained the women's title. The elite races were held in a closed course in central London. That's 6 Music News. The next update's at 2:30.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Listen to 6 Music anywhere on the BBC Sounds app.
Too black, too strong. Too black, too strong.
Yo, Chuck, these dirty dribblers are still front on us. Show them that we can do this, because we always do this. Ha ha, yeah, boy.
Bass, how low can you go? Death row. What a brother, no, once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the incredible thief. Public enemy number one, 5-4 said freeze, and I got numb. Can I tell them that I really never had a gun? But it's the wax that the Terminator X-bun. Now they got me in a cell, cause my records they sell. Cause a brother like me said, well, Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you wanna listen to what he can say to you. What you wanna do is follow for now. Hell, what the people say, make a miracle, deep up the lyrical. Black is back, all in, we're gonna win, check it out.
Yo, come on.
Here we go again. Bring the noise.
Hey, yo, Chuck, they say we too black, man.
Bring the noise.
Yeah, I don't understand what they say, but little do they know they can get a smack for that, man.
Never batter than bad, cause a brother is madder than mad at the fact that's corrupt like a senator. Soul on the rope, but you treat it like soap on a rope, cause the beats and the lines are so dope. Listen for lessons I'm saying inside music that the critics are blasting me for. They'll never care for the brothers and sisters. Why, cause the country has us up for the war. We got to get them straight. Come on now, they're gonna have to wait till we get it right. Radio stations are questioning blackness. They call us a black, but we'll see if they'll play this. Bring the noise.
Hey, yo, Chuck.
My DJ is warm, he's ex, I call him Norm, you know. He can cut a record from side to side. So what the ride, the glide, what should be safer than a suicide? Soul control beat is the father of your rock and roll. Music for watching, for witching. You call a band, man, making a music of music. But you can't do it, you know, you call them demos.
But we ride demos too.
What you gonna do, rap is not afraid of you. Beat is for Sonny Bono,
beat is for Yoko Ono.
Run the MC first, and a DJ could be a band. Stand on its own feet, get you out your seat. Beat is for Eric B and LL as well, hell.
Watch is for Anthrax.
Rock bells, ever forever, universal it will sell. Time for me to exit. Terminator exit. Bring the noise.
Yo, they should know by now that they can't stop this bummer.
Bring the noise.
Word up, man, they keep telling me to turn it down, but yo, play the flame ain't going out like that.
Come on. Used to be like a comatose. Stand my man, the beats the same with a bolster. Rock with some pizzazz, it will last. Why you ask? Roll with the rock stars.
Still never get accepted as.
We got to plead the fifth, you can investigate. No need to wait, get the record straight. Hey, posse in effect, got flavor. Terminator, exercise checks, play to get paid. You got to check. checking out down on the avenue. A magazine or two is dissing me and dissing you. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Hey, yo, Rip, get the S1W. We got to handle this. We ain't going out like that. Yo, man, straight up on a Columbo tip. We can do this like Brutus, because we always knew this. You know what I'm saying? There's just one thing that puzzles me.
Welcome back. I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time here on 6 Music with my guest this week, Chuck D from Public Enemy.
Hey, Chuck. We got some non-believers out there.
Tell me about meeting Flav for the first time. Actually, yeah, what were your first impressions?
My first impression is to tell this guy to go across the street and smoke his cigarette because we couldn't smoke up in the Spectrum City studios where we made tapes for the radio station, and it had no ventilation because the windows couldn't open because they had bars over it. And the guy came up with a black jacket, black jeans, black hat, black mustache, black shades, and a black pack of cigarettes that he scratched the logos off of. And the first thing, and a black keyboard, because he was actually brought up to the studio by the Townhouse 3 and T.A. the DJ, who later on publicly became known as the son of Berserk. And I first thing I said, dude, you got to go back across the street and smoke that cigarette. That's the first thing I told him.
In terms of Bum Rush the Show in 87, it sounds like there's all these ideas that have been waiting to kind of come out, all this intent, all this passion.
Yeah.
That thing about first albums, there's something special about them because it's like, that's the moment you've been waiting years and years and years for.
That was the build-up. Yo, Bum Rush the Show was the culmination of maybe the 8 years without subconsciously admitting it. But I would say that Run-DMC's album-making process was an influence, especially in the culmination with Raising Hell. And so when it came down to knowing how to put together a diverse rap and hip-hop album, although there had been hip-hop and rap albums before, Run-DMC was the best template. And that's where Yo Bum Rush the Show comes out of. But also it was the invasion of a group concept into an area where there seemed to be a lot of threes and soloists, and we wanted to come across with when you start going one, two, many. You know what I'm saying? So we wanted to present that. And also it was convenient for me because I'm a person who rather be silent. I'd rather be tucked in the back. I'd rather be heard than seen. And it shrouded me. It cloaked me being part of a unit.
But that record, like, it connected with a few people, but like radio were terrified of it. Lots of people it's kind of funny. You sort of imagine a record that important that like everyone welcomed it with open arms, but it took a while, didn't it?
Well, it's supposed to take a while because you're introducing something new.
Yeah.
And if you introduce something that's new, that's been heard before, it could evaporate pretty quickly. It could have the life of a mosquito. Matter of fact, we relished into somebody hating our music more than people loving our music. Because if they loved our music, we would say, you don't know enough about it to love it, so you're being fake. If you hate our music, then we're like, you don't know enough about it, but we're gonna work with you and work at you with what this is to convince you, and that's gonna be something that we're gonna enjoy the time.
Yeah.
You can't really enjoy the time with people that think that they already love it without listening to it or experiencing it. That's what we saw as being something that we can use it to our advantage.
You're gonna get yours!
Suckers to the side, I know you hate my 98!
You're gonna get yours!
Understand, I don't drive drunk, my 98 fly, I don't drive no joke. No cop got a right to call me a punk. Take this ticket, go to hell, and stick it. Put me on the kick, but line up, time's up. This government needs a tune-up. I don't know what's happening, what's a gun in my chest? I'm under arrest.
Can you remember the first time you performed on stage, all of you, to a live audience?
As Public Enemy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was as, performances at the Latin Quarter before our first official performance, and it was a nightmare. Because we didn't know who we were, and more importantly, we didn't know who we weren't. I knew who I was as an MC. I knew who I was as a rapper. But we didn't know what we was as a group trying to present this rapper. and it has to find itself and then find itself and define itself. And then that takes time.
Yeah.
Nobody's good on their first day anywhere. Nobody's good in their first area of time in their formation. You work out the kinks, and rehearsals and practices could do but so much. See, when you're in a rock group, you could kind of look at shows and mimic that, even in your rehearsals and practices, and find yourself in the rehearsal. But when you're coming across and there's very few examples to mimic and there's very little videotape to see, especially as it was in the 80s, you had to kind of like follow your imagination. You had to stretch your imagination beyond to the unknown.
Yeah, because Nation of Millions really takes a lot of its cues from the kind of live stuff. You know, it's a studio record, but the intensity of a live performance is kind of captured on that record, isn't it?
Well, that's why it takes the Nations for a bunch of different reasons. It's the second record. It's coming after touring the world to us. It's called a post-passport record. When you start that record, it shows that our base is not New York. Our base is not the United States. Our base is London. Mm. And that's how that record starts.
I'm a Smithsonian. Are you ready for the Death Jam tour? Let me hear you make some noise. In concert for BBC Television tonight and a fresh start to the week. Let me hear you make some noise for Public Enemy.
This live element is in with the crowd. The live element is not so much with the music. The music, the experience, the happenstance, the collision between the unknown and what is known all happens in the recording of that record, and then releasing that recording experience out to the world to tell the world, like, this group comes with something else at a different speed from someplace else than you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And when that record opens up, it's Dave Pierce talking about Good Evening London. When somebody came across and tells me 15 years after that, they try to talk about, what do you think about hip-hop being international now? I said, well, international, it started out minute one on Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, which kind of goes head-to-head with, you know, London's Calling.
I mean, did you feel a lot of resistance from the kind of, as it got bigger, you said, you know, you're... There's the music establishment, there's promoters, there's the bigger rock bands, people that have had it their own way for a long time, and then you've turned up. Did you feel a lot of pushback? A lot of like, no, you're not supposed to be doing this?
Well, you always feel pushback, but that's what you want.
Right.
You want somebody to kind of like doubt you so you can prove yourself. You don't want a whole bunch of everything embracing you just on GP. You want the doubt. You want the doubt so you can prove it. You got to prove it to yourself, too.
Brothers and sisters! Brothers and sisters! I don't know what this world is coming to!
Yes! The rhythm, the rebel. Without a pause, I'm lowering my level. The hard rhymer, where you never been, I'm in. You want styling? You know it's time again. D, the enemy, telling you to hear it. They praise the music, this time to play the lyrics. Some say no to the album, the show, bum rush the sound. I made a year ago, I guess you know, you guess I'm just a radical. Not on sabbatical, yes, to make it critical. The only part of your body should be part of it too. Pass the power on the hour from the rebel to you.
Hey, yo, Chuck, man, I don't understand this, man. Yo, you got to slow down, man, you're losing them.
Radio, suckers never play me. All the mix, they just okay me now. Known and grown, when the clock in my zone is known. Sneaking and taking everything that the brother owns.
Hard.
Live, next poet supreme, loop for truth, bazooka, the scheme.
Flavor,
a rebel in his own mind, supporter of my rhyme, designed to scatter a line of suckers who claim I do crime. They are my time ticket.
Hey, yo, Chuck, I think we take it short. Show this is Cole Medina, man. Come on, kick it.
Terminator X. Turn, suckers burn to learn. They can't disable the power of my label.
Def Jam tells you who I am. The enemy's public, they really give a damn. Strong Island, where I got a riling. That's the reason they're claiming that I'm violent. Never silent, no dope, getting dumb, nope. Claiming where we get our rhythm from. Number one, we hit you and we give you some. No gun, and still never on the run. You wanna be an S1, grip or tell you when. And then you come again, you know what time it is. MP's the president, pulling out my ray gun. Zap the next one, I could be a shogun. A minute, soft and smooth, I ain't with it.
Hardcore,
raw bone like a razor. I'm like a laser, I just won't phase ya. Old enough to raise ya, so this will phase ya. Get it right, boy, maybe I will praise ya. Playing a role I got soul to. Voice my opinion with volume.
Smooth,
not what I am.
Rock,
cause I'm a man. No matter what the name, we're all the same. Pieces in one big chess game.
Yeah.
The voice of power. Go take a shower, boy. P-E-R crew, our crew, not singular. We wear black wranglers, we're rap stranglers. You can't angle us, I know you're listening. I caught you pissing your pants. You're scared of pissing us, the crowd is missing us. We're on a mission, y'all.
Yo, Chuck, yo, yeah, man. Yo, you got them running scared, man.
Terminator X.
Fringe events at the Six Music Festival. I went to see a band I'd only heard one song by, but that gig was one of my favourite gigs of 2016, featuring five angry-looking men from Bristol.
Steve Lamacq thinks you're the best band playing that weekend and wants to play you on his show. That was a dream come true.
So now we're celebrating the remarkable journey of that band from pub gigs to the Alley Pally.
Well done.
And the small part we've played along the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, idols!
Hear the story so far on BBC Sounds Now. Idols, always poor, never bored. And then on Monday, the triumphant return of live music to our programme as we welcome back the bands to perform an exclusive live set.
Steve Lamacq with Idols.
Listen on Monday afternoon from 4.
On Six Music.
The production on Public Enemy Records doesn't sound like anybody else. Right from the off, you know, especially, I mean, if you get to Fear of a Black Planet, there's a kind of abrasiveness and an immediacy from everything, the mastering, the EQing, it's all, it still takes the top of your head off to this day. I'm fascinated in how you guys achieved that. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of time spent in front of samplers and twisting the hell out of things, but
yeah.
It's, they still sound like bombs going off, even now.
What's the blessing and the curse? The blessing, well, let's talk about the curse. The curse first is that you can't mix Public Enemy Records with anything out of the genre on a regular basis. You only could kind of mix Public Enemy Records with Public Enemy Records. But the blessing is that we took that at a very early part of our formation from the adage of rock music. It says, never repeat yourself. And Bono told me this. Never repeat yourself. Take the chips for where they fall. Just believe in yourself, wherever venture that you take, keep going forward, sideways, or whatever direction you feel, as long as you take it. In the beginning, it was learning techniques. Hank Shockley, Keith Shockley, Eric Vietnam Sadler, the Bomb Squad, you know. Then it was Hank Shockley, Gary G. Wiz, and Kerwin Young, and other contributors, you know, all the way to people like Professor Griff making music, Flavor Flav making music.
How hard has it been to keep Public Enemy functioning? Because there's a lot of strong, powerful personalities, there's a lot of ideas. You carry a lot of weight as artists, there's, you know, there is a responsibility that you have. You can't take your foot off the gas. Over the years, how difficult has it been to keep doing this?
It's difficult because it's a large body of participants within the framework.
Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
It's difficult on the inside, more difficult on the inside than it is on the outside. When it comes down to Public Enemy, it's the vehicle that launched into orbit at a very early stage and age and defined me publicly. It didn't define me personally as a man or as a human being. That definition came before I even did Public Enemy. But I'm blessed, if you're going to go into the stratosphere, go with the accountability and responsibility of where there is power, there is responsibility. And we speak truth to that power, and with the benefit of it being cultural. And culture could change the world if it's in that direction of speaking the truth to power and, you know, positive, as people would say. So, yes, it's difficult, but you got to keep on keeping on. Your lungs have to fight to breathe clear air when there's smoke everywhere. You know what I'm saying? That's a rhyme. But I'm just saying is that you got to keep keeping on, man. And that fortitude and that forwardness is where I like to try to keep it. And that's the beauty about the art form, because that allows us to continue to lay the path for others to ride on top of. That's our duty. That's our job. And I dig it.
How do you feel about America right now? Because I don't think I can think of a time when people have been more divided, a time when there's more aggression, a time when there's more friction and discontentment. And how do you feel about your country right now?
Well, you've seen the chickens come home to shoot. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of mud that's under the rug that's like dripping to the side in a brown stream. Sometimes that brown stream is tatted with red, and hypocrisy is showing to the rest of the world who've been asking questions like, how the hell did this guy, this celebrity, how did he end up being president of the United States? And so the whole world has been looking in, and it's like, how did this happen? We go from Obama, who we might have had some differences with, to a person that doesn't even look like they're fit for any job, much less that job of accountability and responsibility for millions of people and also the planet Earth. Right now in the United States, it's simplified itself for the either or. It's polarized itself into a tit for tat. It's quite simple. People of color and black people such as myself, it's the side that we're on versus the side that hates us. And the reason I say hate is because when they tell you that your lives don't matter as much or at all, then that's spreading hatred. It's clear. And so you gotta fight against that, because what you're doing is you're fighting 21st century fascism.
Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
And all the other isms and the ills that go along with it that are endorsed by fascism and controlled by government. So you have to break it down into really small terms that are clear. It's the side that hates you versus the side that you're on. And you have to fight tooth and nail not to have that steering wheel forsaken for that cliff. So that's where we're at right now.
Every day they don't never come correct. You can ask my man right here with the broken neck. He's a winner to the job, never being done. He would have been in full effect. The late 911 was a joke, cause they all were joking. A day to talk until your life when it's broken. They need to be in the pawn shop on them. 911 is a joke, we don't want them. I call a cow cause the cow will come quicker. The doctor settle up and call a flea flicker. Reason why I say that, cause they flick you off like fleas. They be laughing at you while you're crawling on your knees.
Do you have any optimism in you? Do you feel...
You better have some optimism. The best optimism I think the world had in the last 50 years is when there was some kind of relevance in the UN. But the UN has been obsolete for the last 2 or 3 decades. So its symbol in the past was to hold all these governments in check, from the big ones to the little ones, and pretty much keep the world in a sense of order. But for the world's sake and for people's sake, not necessarily for government's sake. So that has been a tragedy when it's come down to what was envisioned in the past and where we're at right now in the present and the future. So I'm optimistic. But right now, all eyes and all ears are looking in at the United States of America. And like it's some kind of horror flick.
I testified, my mama cried. Black people died when the other man lied. See the TV, listen to me, double trouble.
So there's a lot of guests on the new record. There's Mike D and Ad Rock from the Beasties. There's Run DMC. There's George Clinton, who we spoke about earlier. And Ice-T and Nas and Rhapsody and Questlove and all these amazing people.
And so there's always contributors in there. We made this record not to intentionally and purposely, all right, let's get a whole bunch of features and collabs so we can market this record. It's had an organic coming together. My performance is obligated to that 1,000% commitment to the public, but your art is your art, and you need people to get it across, and you need to salute them as they work that. That's the goal.
Now, here's a little story we got to tell
about a sound so deaf, you know so well.
It started way back in history
with the BC Boys,
LL Cool J,
Run DMC, and Public Enemy.
And the final thing is we ask our guests to pick the final song we're going to play. What should we go out on?
Well, if I had to pick a Public Enemy song, it would probably be Public Enemy number one on the new album, What You Gonna Do When the Grid Goes Down.
Why that song?
Because that's the song that Run DMC and the Beastie Boys dragged me into Def Jam after Rick Rubin had asked me for 2 years and Jam Master Jay and MCA to be involved with Def Jam. I told them no, and this was the thing. I finally said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And that was the record. So it's actually myself paying homage to LL, Run DMC, Beastie Boys, Def Jam, original concept, Terminator X, saluting them on that record on my 60th birthday. If I had to pick a song that actually said, you know, stay woke, be woke, stay in tune to the times upcoming more than ever, is Impressions, Curtis Mayfield, People Get Ready.
Then we shall go out on that song. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time, sir. It's been great.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Of this week's first time, and that was The Impressions with Curtis Mayfield, People Get Ready, the final choice of my guest this week, Chuck D from Public Enemy. If you like the show, head to the BBC Sounds app and search First Time to hear more episodes from the archive and subscribe to the podcast. I'll be back next Sunday talking to Hollywood royalty and 60s icon Nancy Sinatra. Until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
6 Music.
Tonight from 6, now playing with Sean Keaveney.
6 Music.
At 4, Amy LeMay.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Right now, it's Guy Garvey's finest hour.
Who put Garvey on the air?
The BBC.
B. Belly BC. That's who.